There's a stage turn.
You know, we want to.
I'll face this way. You speak there, I'll speak there. And then we can swap over.
I've got a better idea. I think you should sit there.
Okay.
And then at least one of us is looking there and one of us is looking there.
Come sit, Ryan. Come sit.
Okay.
I'm much happier here.
I'm much happier.
There you
go. All right. It's a great opportunity that you guys all have to ask your questions to some really dynamic individuals. Please ask your questions. We are thanking a couple of people for making this opportunity possible. Accenture, they are a phenomenal partner. We also have Mercedes-Benz, so that car over there, we hope to be driving after the show, right, Phoebe?
If you listen to the show and you pay attention to what we say, then you can drive the car.
This guy's going to get us into
this. Yes, you can. Just don't ask me for permission to do so. Then, of course, Contemporary Events, it's why the stand looks so great.
Stunning.
So we're very grateful to them. And then, of course, Cliff Central, they're also one of our supporters and sponsors. So the way you can repay Cliff Central is go there and listen to some podcasts, right? I think we're done.
Let's do this.
Phoebe, just summarize your experience here for these guys because they've just arrived.
How are we going to top like the last 4 or 5 sessions? I mean, you guys have to be shit hard. You realize that? Because we've really had some exceptional people, exceptional experts. So the ball is in your court.
And
challenge accepted.
Excellent. We're pleased to hear that. We are talking how young executives can more effectively lead their organizations. That's the conversation today. It doesn't get better than Gil and Run.
Yeah.
Gil, please just summarize for us who you are. Tell them why you're such a big wig.
I'm definitely not a big wig. And I saw Putty was here earlier.
Yeah.
So I'm like, gee, I don't want to come after her. But welcome, everyone. Great to have you here, and thank you for your time. Hopefully we won't be wasting it too much. So you want us to do an introduction?
Yeah, do an introduction, and it looks like you're almost going to introduce Run. Is that what's going
to
happen?
I got a good idea. I think you need to introduce me, and then I'll introduce you.
Cool. I like that.
Done.
Okay. So Run over here is the co-founder of a company called the Creative Council Group. Up until a week ago, it was partly owned by ourselves, but the business has been sold to Publicis, which is the third largest advertising agency in the world.
Sure. Oh,
right. So it was a really big deal.
Sure.
He has the privilege and pleasure to call me his partner.
Business partner.
And co-founder. Business partner and co-founder.
Let's be clear about the business partner part of it.
The most important thing in his life, though, is that he got married this year. And
yes, congratulations.
Gets better than that. He's expecting a boy.
Okay, congratulations.
So finally he's grown up. So that's my introduction of Run.
So this is my business partner, Gil. We've been business partners for over 20 years.
Sure.
So I've been suffering for 20 years. Every day I get to work. We founded the Creative Council together. For the last 14 years, I've been working hard and he's been in the press. And finally, we sold our business. We finally sold our business. As Gil said, a week ago, our deal was announced. When we sold our business, before we sold the business, it was the biggest agency in Africa.
Yes.
Or in South Africa. And I think it still is the biggest agency in Africa. It's now part of the Publicis Group.
Wow.
And hopefully today you guys can ask us whatever questions you want to get whatever insight you want so that you guys can also sell your businesses to a multinational.
Can I make just an interesting point? Rand said that we've been business partners for 20 years. But we've only been running the Creative Council for 14. So I think a natural question would be, what the hell were you doing for the other 6 years? We failed in a whole lot of businesses before the Creative Council success. So,
in fact, our last business, which went insolvent in 2001, was an internet company, which we founded in 1998 when the dot-com internet bubble was just starting. And we ran this business for 3 years, and we developed this amazing product for 3 years. And 2 weeks before the time we were supposed to go live, we went to the office, and there was a padlock on the door, and our business was insolvent. Mm. So literally, before we started Creative Council, we were insolvent. We had zero money. We had lost everything.
Wow.
I moved back to live with my parents. Gil still lives with his parents. No, I'm kidding. And in 2000 we were absolutely insolvent. and we were looking for opportunities. We knew we had a great partnership, but we were looking for something to do as partners. And we had nothing to do. To the point where I was going for job interviews just in case I needed to get a job because there's nothing to pay the bills. But we knew we wanted to be entrepreneurs. And so we explored every single opportunity and they all led to dead ends. They all required money, which we didn't have. They all required funding, capital, which we never had. And then one day I walked into a store and I went to visit my girlfriend who was doing in-store promotions, serving yogurts and toothpaste in-store. And I arrived there and a few things happened. The first thing is she wasn't there. The next thing is that I saw 60 other people doing in-store promotions in the store and they were all bad. Mm. And I phoned Gil and I said, listen, there's a massive opportunity in this game called in-store promotions. We got to get into it. And I'm cutting a long story short, but we got into it and we hired a 12 square meter office in Parktown. Actually, it was Hillbrow, but let's call it Parktown. It was in Wellington Road. It's on the border. If you parked your car on the one side, it was Hillbrow. If you parked on the other side, Parktown. And so we hired a 12 square meter office. And we didn't have furniture, so we took garden furniture from our house and we put it down and we got a phone. Telcom gave us a phone line. It took them a long time to install, but Telcom did give us a phone line. And we started cold calling. And we cold called literally for 8 or 9 months before we got any real leads. Now, can you imagine waking up every morning for 8 or 9 months and all day long just picking up the phone to get a no, no, no. Until eventually the one day I got hold of someone at one of the banks and I said, hi, my name is Ran and we do promotions. And he said, what kind of promotions do you do? And I said, I'm going to call you back. And that's how we started Creative Council.
Unbelievable.
Sundani, where are you?
Unbelievable.
Where's Sundani? We've answered your question, right? Okay, very, very good. So, I guess the key point here, and you've highlighted it, is that failure is a very important part of any journey. What has failure taught you, Gil?
What I realized looking back is that when you fail, you're at the worst point. You're really at the trough. And I've got this thing where I really believe that breakdowns actually equal breakthroughs. Very often in life, a breakdown will lead to a breakthrough. The problem is, when you're going through the breakdown, you can't really see it. So after a few failures, you kind of realize that, gee, you know, I've failed before. I've come up again. I've failed again. I've come up again. Chances are the third time I failed, and I'm gonna come right. That kind of confidence that when you fail, you can come up is very important for entrepreneurs. And statistically, there's a research that's been done that shows that first-time entrepreneurs fail something like 90% of the time. Second-time entrepreneurs, guys who failed once and try again, fail a second time, they failed like 30%. And then third-time entrepreneurs fail only 10% of the time.
Interesting, very interesting.
Because they learn so much, and very often you learn a lot more when you fail than when you succeed. Because when you succeed, you've probably done a whole lot of things right and a whole lot of things wrong, but you don't really know what the things that are wrong are. Okay? Whereas when you fail, you're forced to reflect and go, shit, I never want to feel this thing ever again.
Let's go back to the
drawing
board. Absolutely.
So what am I never going to do ever again? So I think if I had a choice of investing in two types of entrepreneurs, one who's that, and they're both identical, and the only difference between these two entrepreneurs is that one has succeeded 3 times and one has failed 3 times, 10 out of 10 times I'd invest in the guy who's failed 3 times. Because I know he knows how to handle failure. I know he knows how to pick himself up again. And I know he's going to be resilient. And the one thing is, in business, if you have not failed, you haven't been in business long enough. It's inevitable.
Point.
It's just a question of the quantum.
When was the last time you failed?
Today. Today I had a major, major failure. To the point, I have to be honest, I was thinking, I didn't want to let anyone down, but I was like, there's no way I can face people. I need to go to bed.
Yeah.
It was a major, major bad day.
But that's the life of running a business, and that's the life of an entrepreneur. We get hits and we fail every single day. And not only do we have to get up, but we have to get our staff and our troops behind us to keep running and to keep fighting. Because if we, even after we take the biggest knock, If we sit down or if we go and get into bed, as Gil says, then there's no business. And 14 years of building Africa's biggest agency have all gone to waste.
What's been the secret to your business partner success? I mean, 20 years is a long time, guys.
Very long.
Tell me about
very, very
it.
Long.
Tell me the winning ingredients. What's made it work for so long?
I think there isn't one specific winning ingredient, but I think the main thing is that we've got shared values and shared interests. So I think those are are great foundations for a partnership. And we made a pact quite early in our partnership that we would always be equal partners.
Okay.
And that way I never have to worry about whether he's pulling for himself or pulling for the partnership, because I know that we're completely aligned in whatever we do. And if you can find a good partner, not like I did, but if you can find a good partner...
That's because I found him.
If you can find a good partner, it's the best asset that you can have.
Absolutely.
Because when you're running a business or starting a business, no one knows what you're going through except yourself and maybe your partner. Mm. And if you feel down, like you can't get up, your partner picks you up again. And if he feels down, you pick him up again. So there's nothing that is better than a good partnership to get you through. In our organization, the partnership has also allowed for there to be two CEOs.
Okay.
Which means that we're always twice as strong as our competitors because there's two of us. And what they can get done with one CEO, we can get done at least double because there are two of us.
Mm.
So I think those are some of the secrets to our partnership.
I think some other things, we employ like about 1,500 full-time people. When you wake up in the morning you get to a point in the beginning when you're starting a business, you're worried about survival. You're worried about just paying the rent. But you get to a point, and I really wish it for all of you. If you're not there yet, I really wish it for all of you to get to a point where you're not worrying not just about survival, but growth and legacy and stuff like that. And for us, we're at a point now where we're fortunate that survival isn't the key objective. It's about legacy and it's about job stability and job creation. When you wake up every morning and you realize it's not just about, geez, can I pay my bond or my house or my car payment or whatever. When you realize that, you realize you are responsible for employment. And there is no greater responsibility, I think, than being responsible for someone else's job, someone else's future, someone else's career, them and their livelihood and their family's survival. When you realize that gravity, you realize that you cannot afford to mess around with a partnership. You can have agreements and disagreements, but at the end of the day, you have to do what's right for the business because you have 1,500 people and whoever else there is reliant on them. They're expecting you to wake up every morning and back for them. And I think whether it's 1,500 or 15 or two people, as soon as you're an employer, you have to step up to a higher level than just yourself. If it's just you, that's cool. You can take chances. But if it's more than just you, you have to accept that responsibility.
So I want to jump in here because I would hate for us to get stuck on a startup kind of conversation. You've pulled us nicely to where I would really like our conversation to go. And that is that next level. When you're a young individual, a young entrepreneur, who is then turning into a CEO, I mean, there's different roles there. What have you guys learned in terms of the difference between an entrepreneur and a CEO, the difference in those roles, please?
You talk about the difference in those roles. The two roles are completely, completely, completely independent. The one role is an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is a person that takes chances, that starts a business, that takes all the risk. That's the role of an entrepreneur. The role of a CEO is to lead an organization. Now, I say lead, and I highlight it against the word management. So I think management is one thing, and management is usually done by rules, telling people what to do, telling people what targets to meet, telling them what happens if I don't hit their targets, etc. The CEO role is to lead people through vision, through looking forward to make sure that they harness every opportunity. So the role of the CEO is almost someone who looks forward and makes sure that he's leading his troops into the right place with the right opportunities, with the right tools, etc., etc. And that's very different from management or entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is about taking chances. It's about working hard. It's about working hard without knowing the outcome.
Opportunity.
And sometimes, in fact, most times, the best thing that an entrepreneur can do is actually get a CEO. Because okay. you may be a brilliant entrepreneur, but you may not be the best leader of people. I must say, in the first probably 7 years of Creative Council, I was a shit CEO. I kept the title. I was a very, very, very good entrepreneur because I saw... I mean, Gil's still a shit CEO. Oh, sorry. No, I kept the title of the CEO because to me, I couldn't separate the role of the entrepreneur from the role of the CEO. But I wasn't a very good CEO. I'd manage people through fear. I'd manage people through rules. And only after I took on an executive coach who sat me down and said, cool, if you want to be the CEO as well as the entrepreneur in this business, let's sit down. Let me teach you how to be a CEO. And what you learn is that the two roles are very, 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 very different. And I can tell you one thing. There's no glamour in being a CEO. There's no glamour in being an entrepreneur. Both require hard work. And you've got to pick what's more suited for you. Whether you want to be the CEO, the entrepreneur, or if you're really good and you're really brave and you really want that much responsibility, then you can take on both.
The first or biggest mistake that you've made as a CEO is what? And what did you learn from it?
The biggest mistake. I think one of the earliest, biggest mistakes that we both made as CEOs or entrepreneurs in those early days, I guess, is that we didn't realize the importance of people in an organization. Now, that's something that very often people, they say it, but they don't mean it.
Okay.
And we didn't mean it. We said we would get good people, but actually we got the cheapest people or the people who were willing to work for us. And that was a big mistake. And I'll give you a simple reason why. And it's a simple maths in a salary band for a certain role. The difference between getting a mediocre person and the absolute best person for that salary band or that role is usually about 20%. So to get the best, you're paying a 20% premium. But the best person will give you 100% return.
Good point.
So actually, from a return on investment perspective, you want to hire the best and surround yourself with great people. The other reason is that...
Can I stop you there for 1 second? Sure. Let me give it to you guys in the form of a practical example. So about 7 years ago, we needed to hire a financial director for the group. Financial director. Now, a cheap financial director at the time cost us 75,000 rand, maybe 80,000 rand. And an expensive financial director cost us 100,000 rand.
Are we talking about a month, not a year, right?
A month. A chartered accountant, financial director. So the difference was between 75 and 100,000 rand, 25,000 rand a month. You take that and you annualize it, you're talking about 300,000 rand a year, the difference between the cheapest guy and the best guy. Our financial director who we hired 7 years ago left us. I'm not going to say when because then someone's going to work out who he is. And we went back and we traced all the mistakes that he made. And we realized that he cost us over 10 million rand in mistakes. So we saved 300,000 bucks. Yeah. We lost 10 million bucks. So the lesson is, like Gil says, the difference between hiring the bottom and the top of a salary band is 20%. Hire the best. Less people, but the best people.
And then the second point to that...
Love that.
Is that an entrepreneur thinks that he's master of all trades, but that's not true. You need to be jack of all trades as an entrepreneur, but you're definitely not ever going to be a master of all trades. So...
It's your baby.
It's your baby,
you know,
and you want to do everything.
No one must touch.
Sure, but the point is, there are people who can come in who have learned lessons that you haven't even made the mistakes yet that they have done and made and won't let you do. So you have to surround yourself with people who are better than you, who are more experienced than you. Here's the catch. Entrepreneurs, when I say this to entrepreneurs, they often come to me, they're like, yeah, but if I get all these really clever people, cleverer than me, more experienced than me, and I'm the entrepreneur, then what am I there for? What am I good for? Like, then they may say, like, I'm not going to be led by you.
And I think everyone feels this.
Everyone worries about this. And my answer is always, but you're the entrepreneur. You're the one who took the risk. You're the one who had the vision. You're the one who's employing them. So I don't think that it takes away from a brilliant entrepreneur to hire better, cleverer people and surround themselves with those people. It doesn't take away from them. It makes them better.
You know what I'm wondering, Klubi? I'm wondering how. How do you sit in front of someone and know that they're the best? Because people can trick you. I mean, Libby, you look great, right? I mean, you really do.
Yeah. But
that's not a trick. You really do look great.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for covering for me. Yeah. But, so you look the part, but are you the part? And how do you determine whether someone is the part or not?
Experience. Come on, tell us a story.
Look, the truth is that we've hired, I mean, we currently have about 1,500 people that work for us. But 1,500 people, we've actually had about 3,000 or 4,000 people that have gone through our business, and we're left with 1,500. That kind of shows that we don't really know how to interview people because we keep hiring the wrong people and they keep leaving. So a few things that you need to consider when you're recruiting people. The first thing is I've realized that I get nothing out of a generic interview because everyone's prepped for the interview questions. How do you perform under stress? What's your best moment? What's your worst moment? What's your degree? What's your best quality? You're not going to get anything under that. So what we try and do is we try and interview based on culture. We try and answer culture-based questions. And quite often you can tell about a person's culture, not how they react in a work situation, but ask them personal questions. Your friends from school, how many of them are you still friends with? That can tell you how much loyalty a person's got. Mm. Talk to me about your toughest non-work moment. Mm. I had a business mentor who once wrote in a book and he said, the best way I interview people is I take them for a drive. Because when they're driving, they can hold the driving pose for X amount of time. But after a while, they'll start skipping the red robots and driving fast and overtaking.
Okay.
And that has a much bigger impact than asking them, so how do you perform under stress? Oh, no, I thrive on stress. I'm brilliant at stress. I mean, come on.
Does that sound familiar?
You know what the best thing is? I ask people what's their worst quality because, you know, you want to see what's the worst quality. What do they answer you? They say, you know, I'm going to tell you something, but it could be my best or it's my worst. I'm a perfectionist. We get that every day. We get that every day. So it's important to dig through that. Now, I know Gil over here, I've sat in some interviews where he puts people through interviews and all I hear in the interview is, why? 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 Have you ever heard the Wedwo ad? Why? That's exactly what the interview is. And the reason why he does that is because he really wants to understand the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of how this person thinks.
There's a really awesome technique.
Hello.
Ran asks one question, which I really love, and it's indicative of our company culture.
I like how these guys are getting Are you ready to do it?
We're
inclusive.
Don't you
want
to
be in
the
company now? Come on. Yeah.
So,
awesome.
So this question that he always asks, he goes, if you were running late for this interview, you're running late for this interview and you're coming down Corlett Drive on the way to our offices and the robot's about to turn red. In fact, if you were to cross it, it would be at amber. But in fact, and he goes and he pauses and he'll go, in fact, if you cross it, you know it's a red light. So I'm asking you this question. If you were running late for this interview, and the only way not to be late would be to cross the red light, would you do it or not? Now, I want to ask a question, simple question here. How many people here, put up your hands, would say, no, I wouldn't cross the red light.
Yeah, hands up if you wouldn't cross the light.
Hands up if you wouldn't cross the light.
Okay,
the red light.
Hands up if you would.
Okay. All of the guys with your hands up, you can come for an interview anytime.
Whoa. All the ones who put their hands up and wouldn't, put your hands up again, the ones that wouldn't cross the line. Okay, you can work in procurement and finance.
Introducer.
Yeah. So let me jump in here because we do have someone that would not cross the light. Lynette and Thule, welcome to Future CEOs.
It's Eric Wood.
Thank you very much for having me.
Guys, this is a superstar right here. Just tell everyone who you are and what you do and why we should listen to you, please.
Wow. Well, my name is Lynette Ntuli. Hi to everybody also behind me. I run a business by the name of Innate Investment Solutions. We're in property development and asset management solutions in the infrastructure sector in South Africa. beyond that, I'm very interested in the issue of entrepreneurship in this country, love the young people in this country and believe in them, and that's why we run platforms like Ignite SA. I've had a very busy morning at Leader X this morning, so I've just leapt downstairs. We were talking to women about entrepreneurship and our role in the economy as well as business. So it's an absolute pleasure now to be up here and talk about something else I'm passionate about, leadership, and particularly leadership from young, dynamic South Africans, because this is our time, and more importantly, we've also got to do it.
Very, very well said. I'll let you introduce yourself anytime. But guys, the questions that are coming up here are very startup-y, I certainly feel. I want us to move away from that. I do want us to go into conversation about young people leading and the issues that we're facing. I mean, you guys are adding incredible value.
You're not young already. Anymore.
I guess there's a...
Young at heart.
Yeah.
Youthful.
I am.
How old are you, Lynette?
I'm 32.
You're 32. You're very young.
She looks great.
She looks good.
Great for her age.
Okay, let's throw a question your way. And perhaps maybe it's a question that we've already asked. The biggest mistake you've made as a young leader in your organization?
The biggest mistake I've made as a young leader in my organization is to believe that I could do it all.
Huh? Okay. Yeah. And it wasn't, yeah.
So in my career, I've invariably been the youngest. I've invariably been the only woman, particularly in the sector that I operate in. And then I've obviously got my South African tax of obviously having this darker hue. So in that instance, what tends to happen is you're trying to overcompensate. They've put you in a position of trust and responsibility. Apparently, you're also the most skilled. So you're also trying to make sure that you're getting everything done and everything at the same time. But the laws of science are simply that the sun can only shine in one place at one time, and I am not the sun.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest mistake I've made, is tried to be all things to all people, trying to do everything at the same time when I've got 24 hours like everybody else and Superwoman too.
We've touched on so many of those points this morning, this afternoon, about stress, about trying to do everything on your own, about delegation, everything you just said.
We had a great conversation about women and how to break through the gender glass ceiling and some of that's coming out here as well.
Can I say, like a lot of young people here, you can follow us on Twitter.
Oh, come on.
Let's get the conversation going.
Oh my gosh.
Mine is Gil_Oved. I'd love to hear from all of you. And yours is?
Gil_Oved.
And mine is Miss Ntuli, spelled MSNTULI.
Miss Ntuli and Gil_Oved. Follow us if you can.
Should we tell everyone what ours are as well? Future_CEOs. We'll just do it very quickly. How do we deal with ego as young people who are potentially being fast-tracked in our organizations or in our careers? You're a dragon. Dragon's in dragon. I mean, it's a really incredible honor to have that. You guys are Entrepreneur of the Year for 2015, or recognized as that. You are doing phenomenal things. Everywhere you go, everything you touch turns to gold. How do we deal with this ego thing? Who's up first?
Run.
So I think entrepreneurs do have egos. I think it's a natural thing that we have. We have to be opinionated and have egos. But I find that the minute that your ego gets too big and that you start being arrogant or abrasive, the universe has a way of humbling you. The universe has a way of putting you back in your place.
That is so true. Yeah.
And, you know, I must say, I've often got lost with myself. You know, you win an award, you win clients, you're on top of the world, you believe that you're king of the castle. And every time that I've abused that, or I've let my ego get the better of me, something has happened to humble me. I've lost an account. I've lost the best staff. So in the universe, everything tends to equilibrium. And I think we all need to keep our humility about ourselves. And if we don't, the universe will find a way to bring you back.
Gil, just talk us through your experience of, again, this ego thing that can happen when you're on TV and in the spotlight and in the public eye.
I just think that you can't buy your own sales pitch bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, you can sales pitch other people, but when you look at yourself in the mirror, you got to be true to yourself. And if you're not true to yourself, then what are you doing it for? So, like, really, like, so some producer decided at some point to ask me to come and do this There are 10,000 other people who are more qualified to be a dragon on the show. Entrepreneur of the Year, I mean, decided by a few judges. I'm very honored, very humbled. But really, I mean, there are lots of amazing guys. And whose criteria is it anyway? You could fall for all that crap. But it's bull. I mean, honestly. And if you want, just look outside. You'll find thousands of people more qualified, better-looking, richer, smarter, more
with
educated.
A nicer hat.
Any angle. No. This is the best hat. That's the one. No, but you know what I'm saying? So you can't fall for that crap, and there's no time for it. At the end of the day, we all live, breathe, eat, sleep, die. Those are absolutes. Those are facts.
And don't get easily distracted.
In between. Yeah, so yeah. I think humility is such an important quality in entrepreneurs. And to Run's point, I don't think it's either or. I think you can have an ego, but let's define it. There's no space in life for arrogance. I've seen incredible guys. I've met amazing people around the world, successful in every way, and they're humble. So if I ever am tempted to not be, I just remember, wait a minute. Yeah, that's the first thing. You got to have an ego. You got to believe in yourself. You got to back yourself. You got to think, geez, I've got something special. I'm going to beat the odds. I'm going to win when others maybe fail. That's great. But never at the expense of humility and never at the expense of buying your own sales pitch bullshit. When you look in the mirror, there's no space for that.
Ego.
Ego. No time for it. You know, I always make an example to say, you know, once you win the award today, once you have been appointed to the position and you were the first and allegedly the greatest on that date in 2015, your biggest challenge after that is make sure that you need to move to the next thing, the next award, or the next level in your life. Because in 10 years from now, we can't still be referring to you as the former winner, the former first. Yeah. He was. You're here. You are and is. So if you're not moving on to the next thing because you're still draining the marrow out of your greatness today, you're also not going anywhere. You're not contributing anything to the world. Second thing around the issue of ego. We are in business. We lead organizations. You don't do business with Excel spreadsheets. You do business with people. Yep. People make decisions on your behalf. People open doors for you. People sign the invoices and the checks.
Love that.
There is a man at the gate who opened it and is making sure that right now here at Santon, our cars are safe and potentially not jammed in any way. Those are all people at every level in the game. So if you're going to carry yourself like you don't need people, and you're going to carry yourself on the strength and the expense of your own hot air and gas, you're also going to have a very, very, very difficult time in the world winning, getting anywhere, and getting anywhere that counts with other people accelerating you to the success that you claim to need. So no time for it. Leave it at the door and get on with
your
work.
Well said.
Yep, very nice.
Well said.
The concern that a lot of people have is that they look at you and they say, wow, you're dressed very smart. You're looking good. He must be arrogant. But you don't know him. You haven't had a conversation with him. A very important point is always break down the gap that exists between you in whatever form you
but
can.
But Gareth, I need to stop you on that point. We need to look good, guys.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I certainly feel as a woman, my femininity is very important to how I lead and how I influence the spaces I'm in. So I'm not going to wear a black suit like you and look like I'm going to a funeral. I need to look colorful, you know? This is me, you know?
Sorry.
And some people are going to look at that and think, well, I don't know, fancy, you know? But actually, I'm a person. But I'm a person who has self-fulfilling needs that I need to express in myself every day. And amongst those is for me to feel confident, I need to look good. So sometimes we do two things. We look at somebody who looks perhaps as dapper as the gentleman behind me and we think arrogant. But then perhaps we look at somebody who's very dressy and flashy and we think glamorous. And then we meet somebody who's wearing a pair of Woolies chinos and a Mr. Price t-shirt and we think, I wonder what I could get from him. And we all make the mistake at that point in time of missing an interaction that could have changed our lives simply based on the fact that we didn't tap into the person, but we tapped into how they chose to present into themselves and then blocked ourselves off from everything else. So I still think we need to look good.
I agree, by the way. Yeah. I agree.
Questions? Mr. B. Atman. Are you here? Okay, let's read. Were there any mentors that you had as individuals that fundamentally added to the success of the business, guys? If so, how?
So I think to anyone who's an entrepreneur, you'll appreciate that being an entrepreneur is a very, very, very lonely place. Because your friends and your peers don't really understand what you're going through. In fact, usually you interact with people who are in full-time jobs, and you go to them and you say to them, Tishina, you know, I'm starting this business and this happened and that happened. And they look at you like, oh, well, we can't really relate.
Mm.
So it's a very, very, very lonely place. And I think for myself and for Gil, we never had entrepreneurs until we joined organizations that were set up for entrepreneurs and for young business leaders. So we both joined an organization called YPO, which is Young Presidents Organization. We both joined, or I joined an organization called Entrepreneurs Organization. And I think that's where we found our mentorship. Do we have mentors on a day-to-day basis? Not really. Do we have mentors within the EO and the YPO organization? Definitely.
Love that. And for you, mentorship?
For me, mentorship for me has played a big role in the success of our business, in the sense that when I decided at a point that I would leave a career and go and start a business, I told people who could help me, not financially, but who could help me with access, whether it was access to information or to specific individuals who could get me to the projects that I needed to play a space in. Are those people I speak to every week, every month, every year? No. And you tap into the energies of different people as and when you are confronted by a challenge in your own leadership journey or a challenge in your business. I love what you're saying about organizations. Mm-hmm. Everybody hates paying subscription fees because you're wondering what you're paying for. These organizations, if you don't go to them and draw the value that you're paying for every month, then you simply don't get it. And therefore, you don't, you know, you don't max out that social capital.
You know, I want to talk about that. So when I joined these organizations, YPO, an entrepreneur organization, it's very expensive to join those organizations. And every now and then, I used to ask myself a question. Jeez, you know, I'm paying, I don't know, whatever the number is, 50,000 Rand a year to be in this organization. Is it worth it? And I started to question it. Is it worth it? And then I met one guy in one meeting who helped me change one decision. And that one decision changed not 50,000 Rand, but 5 million Rand.
Mm.
And that's the value of it. So I think touching on your point, you'll always get a return on investment if you're hanging around the right people and the right organizations.
Absolutely. Isn't there a risk here, though, that you are perceived or seen or felt to be someone that just takes?
No, no, no. You see,
let's balance that.
And this is the other balancing act around mentorship. And I think in our country in particular, we need to rebalance the view on it completely. We have a construct at the moment in our society where everybody thinks mentorship is come to Lynette and Dooley and take her IP, her experience, and her access and networks that people pay me for on a daily basis for free. Mm. And I'm supposed to almost be socially obligated
Absolutely.
To give that to you.
Yeah.
I'm not. If you're going to come to me and you're going to ask me to mentor you, I need to understand that if I'm going to give you those resources that I need in my business, in my life, where I could be elsewhere during that time, what is the ROI on this for me? And are you, in the first place, bringing value to my table? Have you even defined what that value is in your own life and in your own space before you now are here to clarify or augment it with mine? And I think a lot of people think in the mentorship game, you come to take somebody's value. Uh-uh. You arrive with your value, you clarify your value, you augment your value, and then you go back and you do value-adding things out in the world.
Mm.
So I think that's also something in a big way we need to change in our country, that if you're coming to ask somebody for something they get paid for free, then there needs to be an exchange of something.
It's so true, because I always feel, you're so right, I always feel that with mentors, there has to be a sense of obligation.
It's not CSI.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm giving you something somebody pays me for Monday to Friday, but in my business hours.
Mm.
So from that perspective, I need to understand that if I build and invest in this relationship with you, where are you going from to? And I can't be the one who dictates where you are going to. You've got to come and tell me that that is where I'm going. But you, Lynette, are my train, my truck, my car, my parachute that's going to help me land there. And then I can immediately see the trajectory of our journey. But more importantly, what I'm able to give to you, so that I can also be honest with you. And you don't sit there and enjoy expensive scents and coffees with me instead of getting the value that you actually need to go somewhere else. My brand does nothing for you. It does something for me. But your brand, if you come and we agree on how we are going to exchange value between us, then elevates to the next level. And hey, I have a great feeling when you get to where you're going because I know my input into that. But I have no great feeling if after all we've done is drank coffee and we've known each other, but you haven't still gotten to where you're going. There's no value for me in that interaction. So please, 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 guys, before you ask mentors to take you to the next level, please, 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 bring the bricks and the cement and the water. Come to the party to build the step. So that all I'm doing is maybe buying you the 5 liter of white paints to paint the step as a mentor.
Well said. By the way, we're doing a Who Coached Steve Jobs session in a couple of minutes where we're going to be talking about mentoring and coaching. You're welcome to be on that panel as well if you like. Very well said. I see. What's
you're fully booked today, huh?
Today.
It was so good.
I've done a lot of mentorship and I always get more than I give. So mentors gain as much as the mentees do. It's that simple.
And Gil, the point of you getting more than you getting more than you've given is a lot to do with what the mentee came to you with. Yeah. And I'm a big believer in that too. Yeah. If they came to you with something to build on, boy, you're going to get a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it. If that person has potential, you're going to help them realize the potential and some, and you're going to benefit from it going forward. We have another question here that came through. It's a nice one from Anonymous. We won't try and identify who Anonymous is. How do you keep motivated in the face of adversity? So we've spoken a little bit about it. Maybe Lynette, you weren't here initially, so just share your view there, please.
How do I keep motivated? I think all of us have a source, and in that source, we know who we are there, we know our beginnings, we know almost the places where we are level with the universe, and whoever it is that you pray to, and whatever it is that keeps you balanced. And for me, I know what my straight line is, and I always try to go back to the straight line. The other thing that I also try to think about when I need to be motivated, because it's not easy. There are more crap days than great days. It's not easy. You're tired. You're working too many hours. You're on too many flights. You're meeting too many people who are bad for your ego and for your emotions and for your space. But it's also to stay around a circle of people who juice you up.
Rejuvenate.
So when you go home, when you are in your workspace and the culture of your organization, the friends that you keep, and also the things that you do outside of work, because we're not just machines and robots that click away at things. Also the things that juice us up in other areas. So I, for instance, enjoy sports. So when I'm having a really stressful day, after that stressful day, you'll find me doing something outside, because sometimes sports also helps us level the field and play the game that was playing in our mind differently head again.
Is the sport boxing?
Yes, I do box.
Ah, okay.
And that's part of my gym routine. I do box, but I also play golf and I play hockey too and I swim, because in all of that, it just helps me reprogram and come back to see that the challenge I'm facing is also not ever permanent.
We only have a few more minutes with these guys. Libby, what do you want to ask them?
I think I want to add to Lynette's point about what actually keeps you motivated. I think for me, what keeps me motivated is there's nothing else that I'd rather be doing than being an entrepreneur.
Love it.
So I say to myself when I wake up in the mornings, being an entrepreneur is like being on a roller coaster. Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's fast, and sometimes it's slow. But that's the life that I've chosen. Now, I could have chosen a flat life in employment, climbing the ranks. And every time I have a hard day at work and I feel to myself like, why am I doing this? I just think of what the other side looks like. And the other side looks like a place where there's no extreme highs and extreme lows. And there's no master of your own destiny.
Sure.
Wake up, think of an idea on the one side and execute it the next minute. That's the opposite. So whenever I feel demotivated, all I think to myself is, I've chosen in my life, I made a proactive choice to ride the roller coaster and to scream and laugh through the ups and to scream and laugh through the downs. Because ultimately, the ups will end and so will the downs.
Very, very, very nice. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to pose a question, if I may. And I'd like us all just to take a minute and a half. And here's the question. If you could go back in time and talk to the younger future CEO you, what would you say to yourself? Think about it for a moment. Gil, I just want to introduce something here, because I am aware that the dragons have come together and you guys have written a book.
Yeah.
Just quickly tell us about that, please.
Awesome. Okay.
So I'm going to tell you about the least entrepreneurial thing I've ever done in my life, which is this book. So what happened was, when we filmed it as investments. We never filmed it in episodes. So the first time we saw the show was when it came on TV, and it was quite amazing because 20% of the viewing time was spent on the TV and the other 80% was on Twitter.
Mm.
It's incredible because Twitter was going crazy and we were answering and replying and this and that. We actually have a Dragons WhatsApp group.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them would send me a thing like, "You've just been taken off, man." Or like,
"Very cool.
This person seems to like you a little bit too much." I'm like, "Oh my God." You know, that kind of thing. Anyway, but one of the things that came out is that when we were on the show, the cue for the director to move on to the next dragon is you have to say, "Look, you know, I don't like the numbers. I don't like the business. I don't know. And for all these reasons, I'm out."
Mm.
And then the director knows, cool, you go to the next
dragon. Yeah.
And what happened was a lot of people kept saying on Twitter, "Well, I mean, these are all the reasons you're out. What would make you go in?" So we decided that we're going to write a book. And the book is called, "And For All These Reasons, I'm In."
Okay? Okay.
Yeah. And so it's co-authored by the Five Dragons. And it's coming out at the end of the month. It's at all major booksellers, retailers, exclusive, CNA, independents. And it's done highly graphically, hardcover. It's going to be really awesome.
Mm.
And the reason I say it's the least entrepreneurial thing I've ever done in my life is because we decided when we wrote this book, we felt it was important to give advice to entrepreneurs, be they established ones, startup ones, guys who want to take their business to the next level. And we felt that we need to give back. So we put this book together. And all the proceeds of the book all go to charity.
Oh, yay. Wow.
So okay. We're making no money out of this. We don't want to make money. We want to put it all back into an entrepreneurial charity,
which is
why I don't mind saying to you, please buy our book. Buy our book.
No, yes. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you for doing that. I guess the thoughts have been ruminating. Who wants to start?
What was your question again?
The question was, what would you say to your younger self if you had an opportunity to go back in time?
I'd go back to my... So if I think about my entrepreneurial life, I always worried. I always worried. How am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to hire people? What if I lose the client? What if I can't pay the rent? And I think I lost myself in this... You know, there's a fine line between being constructively paranoid and being paralyzed with fear.
Mm.
And I always walk that fine line of worry versus being constructively paranoid. And if I could go back to my younger entrepreneur self, I'd say... Have more fun.
Relax.
Relax. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the roller coaster. Celebrate the successes and stop worrying about what happens next.
Sure.
Great. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
Great advice. Lynette?
If I had to go back to my...
How far back can you go?
again, all he's saying is you're looking great. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
If you could go back 3 months, what would you say?
Well, maybe let me put it into context for everybody who's here. I started working just after my 20th birthday. So I've been working for some time. So I think I can go a little bit back, about a decade or decade
of six, months.
6 months back at the best of times. But if I look back, particularly on my entrepreneurial journey, and I could go back to myself and say, what could I do differently and what could I tailor? It would definitely be take moments to take in the things that you are doing. I think as entrepreneurs in particular, we're running so hard.
Mm.
We are the business development officer. We are the counselor in the office. We're the financial accountants. We're raising money. We're everyone to everything in that business. And it's almost your life. And very often, the one thing that we don't take time to do is to sit back and ask ourselves the all-critical question, is A, this still my dream? And two, why am I still doing this? And more importantly, why do I do things the way I am, particularly when it gets really overwhelming? So if I could go back, that's definitely something I would do. Just take more minutes to stop, to breathe, to consolidate, and then move forward instead of being consistently on the treadmill.
Okay.
Gil, if you could go back 60 years, what would you tell you?
I just want to say, I've had the pleasure of seeing Lynette in action a couple of times already. And every time she speaks, I'm inspired afresh. I think there's so many people who are naysayers, and they've got a lot of bad things to say about the country, and I think they should shut the hell up. And seeing people like Lynette in action gives me so much optimism and hope for our country. I love it, and I think it deserves a round of applause.
It does.
It's so important. So if I could go back in time, very often I found myself walking into a meeting, and it's a big, scary meeting with very important, big people, and I would really shit myself, okay? And I'd be thinking, I'm so young and so scared and so inexperienced. What are they going to say to me? What are they going to do? And then, like, just before I walk into that boardroom, I like have this like moment of zen where I go, you know what? Act as if, and so it shall become. Okay? Act as if it's... And I actually, what I do is I wear funky socks. Okay. Because I think I need a little cue to remind myself that, you know what, it'll be okay. Nothing has changed. I still do it. But the point I want to make is that if I could go back in time, I would say to myself, when you feel that, it's natural, it's normal, and you know what? Having spoken to so many other successful big entrepreneurs, they're thinking the same thing themselves. Mm. So it'll be okay.
Fantastic. Love it. Fantastic. Libby, a final thought?
It doesn't get better than future CEOs, let me tell you that. Literally.
Guys, this conversation and others will be available on cliffcentral.com. Please go there and download them and listen and re-listen and re-listen. Thank you again. Let's give them a really
warm
welcome.
Thank you to our experts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You were amazing.
Thank you, guys.